Blog Talk Radio.
Interestingly enough, when that song was first recorded, I think around like 1988 or 87, back when the Saints were, you know, first becoming a winning franchise under the tutelage and the auspices of Mr. Jim Mora.
Playoffs.
That the Super Bowl that year just happened to be in Miami, and right. So like the song, they're on their way to Miami. That's in the song, whatever.
Right.
Then the year we finally made it, it was also in Miami. But mm-hmm. Now, of course. We got to change it to Minnesota this time, though.
I guess, you know, and you probably could work it in. Miami, Minnesota. I guess you could squeeze the fourth syllable in there.
There you go. There you go. Welcome, everyone, to Clobbering Time issue number 435. I've had a blast of a blast, a great time last night with my good old buddy Michael French of the Retro Blasting, the master of Retro Blasting, doing our second part of our epic Star Wars State of the Franchise, in this case, last night reviewing Star Wars, some movie called The Last Jerk-Off or whatever it is, a really bad film that calling with the word Jedi in it.
I've finally seen it myself.
Oh, boy. Well, I would definitely be interested in your opinion on it. I'm sure you can take a stab at what ours is. I'm sure you can take a wild guess.
Based on Facebook, I have no idea. I can't imagine what you guys think of it.
I wonder what those guys think. We're a little bit shy, aren't we?
Just a touch. Very reserved.
Reserved. We're like we're blasé. We're laissez-faire about it. We're you could be a movie or not a movie. We could have seen it or maybe we didn't. We don't know.
Right. I will only offer for the moment that I sit in a kind of unique place in that a lot of people might think, well, because some people came across as feeling dead set against, you know, kind of the franchise, the new trilogy, I should say, from the outset, that, you know, no movie was going to have a chance. And I come from the unique perspective of not only having given the new trilogy a chance, but actually enjoying, not loving, I want to emphasize, enjoying the first one, thinking that it set some things up and it had some potential, and then watching the second film and seeing everything come collapsing down. And so I think if you're looking for somebody who, you know, I guess just comes from a perspective of you know, wanting to see what was going to come next, you know, being genuinely interested, and seeing that just get shot to shit. You know, that's my perspective, and that's where I come from. If you know, when called,
no, I understand.
When called upon to discuss it.
Yeah, and again, I went in, only slight difference when I went into the first one was I was like, well, I don't like the director, but I'm going to see what he does. I'll give him a shot. I walked in there, hated the movie, but as many people will tell you, maybe they don't remember because people seem to only like to hear negatives these days.
Mm-hmm.
I said to everyone, I said, look, I hate this one, but let's see what the next guy can do. I'm going to go in there and we'll just see what happens. I'll give the next one a shot, meaning episode 8.
There was enough open-ended stuff to be developed and questions to be answered and things like that. Who knows what they could have done?
Yep.
If they had hired somebody whose apparent purpose was to drop his pants, squat down over the previous film, and just unload the biggest dump you ever saw.
To me, that dump goes all over the original trilogy, too. But, yeah, I'm with you, bro. It's a mess. But I would definitely, again, look, you want to come do an open geek with me one night, we'll sit and die. I would definitely also love to talk about that film in depth with you. But tonight on the happier things, we will take a look at this weekend's spate of NFL divisional round playoff games. Playoffs. I got to stop myself from doing that because I could never not do that. I never miss the opportunity to do that.
Well,
thank you.
It's iconic at this point.
Yes, it is. That man could have said it would have. But so. But first, we'll take a little look back. We will take a little look back at this past week's games. But before we even do that, as many of you all know, my erstwhile companion here, my partner in crime, my side seat driver, hell, my partner. I don't know what you're just my buddy and my pal and my partner on the show. His, of course, team is the Chicago Bears, which we've talked about. We've covered both of our teams plus the NFL this year. And they have made an announcement, I believe, the other day, and they've got a new coach, Mr. Michael Shoemaker. Talk a little bit about what you're thinking and what's going on in your mind now about this, your reaction.
Well, you know, the coaching search took place on New Year's or began effectively before they fired the previous coach. They knew what they were going to do. So they were doing their research and their due diligence for a while. And, you know, John Fox had to be able to read the writing on the wall. He's been around for a while. He's not called the mayor of the NFL coaches for a reason. I mean, he's one of those, you know, just he's an iconic figure in his way just because he's been in the league for so long, coached so long, has so many relationships with other coaches and other teams. That, you know, he's really kind of a very recognizable face. And so he's been around long enough to know what was going to happen. So sure enough, the day after the final loss of the season, they basically parted ways with Fox. And the thing about Fox was that he wasn't even though he was hired at the same time as the general manager, Ryan Pace, who, of course, as you're aware, came from the Saints organization, which, to my way of thinking, especially lately, you can do a heck of a lot worse than drawing coaches and personnel people from the Saints, you know. But Pace came aboard at the same time as Fox, but Fox was not his coach. And there's, you know, there's a lot made of general managers getting to hire their own coach, their own coaches. That's in the organizations that don't give the coach also personnel authority. And in this case, it was sort of a marriage, an arranged marriage, I guess you'd say. They picked up Fox from Ernie Accorsi, who you'll know from the Giants. And he was basically called upon to recommend a coach to them or for them. And he was well acquainted with Fox, and so that's kind of how the whole thing came together. The Bears hired Ryan Pace by themselves, and then they got a guy to recommend, effectively hire for them, John Fox. So it wasn't that Pace and Fox didn't get along, but an arrangement like that is only going to be tolerated for a certain amount of time by the existing general manager. And if he doesn't see wins as opposed to losses, he's going to do something about it. And so he did. And so Mr. Fox was shown the door. And I'll say this, as I think I've mentioned before, and I've read this and I believe it, coaches, particularly head coaches, are frequently given too much credit and too much blame for when a program is doing well or when it's doing poorly. And it's not that what they do is unimportant, but the most important thing that's going to determine whether or not your team is competitive is typically how good the talent is.
Right, personnel.
You know, past that, you know, you really have to, you know, you would really have to do a superior coaching job on inferior talent to really be competitive. And so fact is that, you know, the Bears have been rebuilding, and Fox really came in wrong guy at the wrong time. I don't think Fox was a bad coach. I don't think he's a coach for the ages either. I'm fine with moving on from him, I guess is what I'm trying to say. But Fox, you know, he's a very conservative coach. He comes from the old school of defense and running the football, you know, Woody Hayes, 3 yards in a cloud of dust kind of thing. It's not that he's opposed to offense, but he likes what he believes he can rely on, and that's making tackles and running. And right. In today's NFL, from a coaching perspective, you know, you hate to say it, but given the way things have been opened up, especially in the passing game, you just have to have a competitive passing game. You have to make one somehow, even if you don't have a great Hall of Fame type quarterback or even a pretty good one. You know, you've got to find a way to make plays down the field, because otherwise defenses are just going to stack the line of scrimmage. They're just going to play everything close, and it takes away what little offense you might have otherwise. So in that respect, I think it was time to move on from John Fox. So they went out and they had some interesting candidates at the beginning of the process. They were looking at the Vikings offensive coordinator, Pat Shurmur, and they were looking at one guy really from the Eagles, John DeFilippo, or John DeFilippio. His nickname's Flip, okay? That should tell you what all you need to know about how to pronounce his last name. You know, it's that people don't like saying it, so they're like, hey, Flip. He was the quarterback's coach, and obviously he brought what he brought to the table was having played a big part, along with Frank Reich, Philadelphia's offensive coordinator, with developing Carson Wentz. And Carson Wentz was pretty much neck and neck with Deshaun Watson as potential MVP candidates this year, before both of them tore their ACLs, which, you know, for both guys, as well as they were doing, to tear their ACLs, one earlier in the season and then one later, you know, that's a tough break. I mean, no pun intended. That is, if you're an Eagles fan particularly, given that you were looking dominant before he got hurt, it's really got to suck. But, they were looking at that quarterback's coach, because the whole program's future right now is pretty much oriented around developing Mitch Trubisky, or as we like to call him, Mitchell. So basically, and in fact, if I were running like the stadium and I were doing the sound audio interstitials between plays and stuff like that, I would get a sound bite from the old MST3K Mitchell episode where they go Mitchell. And I would be playing that every damn chance I got. And eventually, of course, Mitch, being young and probably never having seen MST3K, would wonder where the hell that came from, and somebody would have to show him that classic episode. You know, it just, you know, maybe during team meetings, they would take an hour and a half out to show that episode. Indeed. It would be so worth it.
It would be inspired.
Oh, it would. It would, absolutely. But the whole program's purpose now, and rightly so, is developing this kid who seems to have a ton of potential. And I'm glad he's got his first year under his belt. It was tough because there was clear learning going on. And you're watching games. You want to win. But the big thing you want to see out of your young quarterback is development. And you started to see that. You started to see somebody who was composed in the pocket, who was making those accurate throws that was, you know, a hallmark and a strength of his coming out of college. So, you know, you wanted to see that. You started to see that. You started to see the light going on. He was the least experienced of these quarterbacks coming out. So you knew there would be growing pains. And I'm not surprised in a way that Deshaun Watson was doing as well as he was, because basically the Texans said, you know, we're going to do what Washington did with RG3. We're going to cater our offense to this guy's strengths. And, you know, I think they were smart in the sense that you know, it really, especially given that he had targets to throw to, they relied on, you know, rollouts and things to cut the field in half so he wouldn't have as many reads. They gave him options to run. You know, it turned the Texans offense into something really dynamic. And if you've got a quarterback who can do that kind of thing, it's great. Now, at some point, you want that kind of quarterback to develop into more of a pocket passer. Because the NFL, as we see with guys who run a lot, they get hurt. And the last place you can really tolerate an injury is at quarterback. Right. So, you know, they would have to eventually design an offense where the running is only when necessary. And the guy is scanning the whole field and making, you know, accurate throws and that kind of stuff. But in the short term, he was doing a very good job. And in Trubisky's case, he's got similar athleticism. He's not quite the runner that Deshaun Watson is, but he is still very athletic, makes a lot of plays with his legs, and having that dimension is always a good thing, because then the defense, if your quarterback starts gashing you with his legs, then the defense has to assign a spy, you know?
Right.
So, you know, I mean, you wouldn't think like Aaron Rodgers coming out. Nobody was going to confuse him with, you know, Mike Vick or anybody like that. But he makes a lot of plays with his legs. He runs for first downs. He, you know, escapes pressure. You basically, and hell, you can say the same thing about Drew Brees, in the sense that the guy is slippery in the pocket. And
right.
That's one thing that will cross up a defense every time. You think you've got a guy dead in your sights. You think you've got a sack. And the guy shuffles around. He moves around. He senses the pressure. They have to have that almost psychic feel. I'm guessing that it's really a testament to their hearing ability, because they can kind of tell when the footsteps are coming their way and they have to move forward a little bit while they're still looking downfield and keeping their eyes downfield. That's always the key, you know? And Brees does that exceptionally well.
Yes,
so, you know, that's what you ultimately want, is a guy who can use his legs when he has to, but otherwise throws the ball and uses his eyes and plays the game at that cerebral level necessary to be successful long term. I mean, there's a reason why college quarterbacks, you know, they play 3 or 4 years at the most, and that's not the length of an NFL career if you're a quarterback, typically a good one, I should say. So, you know, if you're going to do that at any level of football and you do it for any length of time, if you run too much, you're going to get hurt, period.
Cam Newton is a definite example of that. That's why he was just a wreck the other day. So
yes,
we'll
that's
get to
exactly,
that in a little bit.
That is exactly right. I mean, there toward the end of the game when he got his bell rung, it was a byproduct of that physical style. And, you know, I will give him all the credit in the world in terms of being big enough to take hits that the vast majority of quarterbacks would, you know, that would send them down and out for a while, if not for the game. But the fact is, even he is not big enough to take that kind of punishment over the long term. So he's going to have to adapt his game at some point. And you just, you know, you wonder when that's going to happen. But, you know, Cam, when he is on his game, he is dominating. He's a difference maker. But the problem is, as we saw, when he's not on his game and he tries to make too many plays with his feet, he gets hurt.
That's why he'll have a short career. He's going to have a short career, by the way.
That's exactly right. And one of the things that can shorten a career just as much as getting beaten up and suffering from bad backs, bad knees, spinal stenosis, that kind of stuff, is just getting your bell rung one too many times, and it takes a mental toll. We have guys, unfortunately, hell, Jim McMahon is an example of this. You know, he's basically a step or two away from, you know, being, you know, spending his time coloring things with crayons. His mind is just not where it ought to be for a man in his 50s. Or 60s. I mean, he's just not all there. So anyway, back to the coaching part of this.
Right.
So the upshot is develop the quarterback at all costs. So,
okay.
You know, they were looking at the guy from Philly. They were looking at the offensive coordinator for the Vikings, who has done great things, with Case Keenum, of all people.
Right.
They were looking at Josh McDaniels from the Patriots. Everybody every year seems to have their eye on one Patriots coach or another.
Sure.
And the problem is you never know if you're going to get somebody who's going to be successful, or if you're going to get the next Romeo Crennel or Charlie Weiss, you know, guys who go on, they coach, and they just don't do well. Josh McDaniels had that, you know, that celebrated stint in Denver that did not go well at all.
Yeah.
That dumped him after two seasons.
Right.
So, you know, they just had their eyes on a number of guys, and they settled on kind of a dark horse candidate, but it was somebody that they apparently favored all along, and that was Matt Nagy. I say Nagy, some people say Nagy, and never the twain apparently shall meet. So I guess we'll see down the road where it lands in terms of how to pronounce that last name, Nagy. But the upshot of it is that, as we know, he was the offensive coordinator for the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yep.
And this was especially interesting year for the Chiefs because this was the year that Alex Smith sort of came out, if you will. He was asked to do more, and he did it pretty well. And the only problem was that Andy Reid was calling the plays, and apparently past a certain point, the offense was really suffering. It was just not going anywhere. So he decided to hand the play calling duties off to Matt Nagy. And then all of a sudden,
started winning.
Yes, and that's exactly right. They had been in a slump, and they started to win again. And in fact, over the course of the games that Nagy called, the final five, they went 4-1, and I believe they scored no fewer than 28 points in each of those games. So he was clearly dialed in pretty well to what Kansas City needed to do to score points and move the ball. And so he had that going for him. So the Bears just kind of deciding that they wanted – we talked in a previous show about the trend toward going younger at coach. And this isn't quite as young as, say, Sean McVay out in L.A. You know?
Right, but it's fairly
young. Sean McVay, you know, he's one of those guys you expect to still to be talking in that sort of pre-voice-breaking, high-pitched,
right.
Before you actually go through puberty kind of voice,
yeah.
You know, have pimples on his face, that sort of thing. But that's how young he is, at least to guys like us. But fact is that, you know, people like to see some enthusiasm and youthful exuberance and that kind of stuff. So he's definitely he's not that young, but he's 39, which, in to my way of thinking, still qualifies him as a kid. OK. And basically he's considered by and it's interesting to see the reaction from you know, both the people who will speak publicly as well as the insiders who will, go on record anonymously. And thus far, from what I've been able to gather, no one has a bad word to say about him. Everybody is praising this hire.
Yeah.
So I'm really, really hopeful that you know, they're not just blowing smoke, and that this is truly how they feel about this guy, and that they are excited for him, you know, because if he's as good as they say he is in terms of being sharp and in terms of being enthusiastic and in terms of being a leader, then, you know, that's, you know, that's all of those things is what you want in a head coach, you know.
Sure. Yeah.
And one of the things that I'm excited about, too, is that we were talking earlier about setting up an offensive system to cater to a quarterback's strengths. Well, one of the things that the NFL is discovering is that spread offenses like they run in college, hey, guess what? They work in the NFL, too. And I just think that's interesting because it seems as plain to anyone who's been watching high-powered offenses, you just have to have a good defense to go along with that higher-powered offense, you know. But, you know, these guys who run these high-powered offenses, they frequently run spread-style attacks. They run these things that give them quick slant options, that give them out options, that do wheel routes with the running back, you know. They aren't all, you know, greatest show on turf, Mike Martz, seven-step drop type things where you've got an all-pro left tackle in Orlando Pace protecting Kurt Warner's blind side for, you know, 40 or 50 seconds while he scans the field. I mean, that's not to take anything away from Warner. He was a terrific quarterback.
Right, but he had an amazing line.
Yes, but he had a fantastic offensive line. And he was able to do things with his wide receivers on those breaking routes that, you know, when you're going back seven steps, your receivers are deep downfield. And they have had time to separate from coverage.
Right.
And so
Torrey Holt and Isaac Bruce and Marshall Faulk back there. Yeah. Jesus.
I mean,
you know,
yeah, exactly. I mean, that was an offensive machine. There are no two ways about it. And the thing is, you know, that kind of offensive system. And the reason I know as much about it as I do is because for one unfortunate season, Lovie Smith brought in Mike Martz as his offensive coordinator.
I remember.
And the thing is that you're thinking, well, if it worked in St. Louis, maybe it'll work here. And then you find out the difference between the offensive line that St. Louis had and the line we had.
Right.
Not to mention, and this is a big thing, not to mention the fact that in today's NFL, having pass-catching tight ends is a must. Over the past 10, 15 years particularly, it has developed into a position of real need for any offense that's going to do anything. And, hell, when the Saints were clicking with Jimmy Graham, I think that you can testify to that. I mean,
I miss Jimmy. I love Unger. I'm still glad we got Unger, but I miss Jimmy.
Yes, exactly.
We don't have a tight end right now. It really hurts, by the way.
Right.
But,
it is so, so helpful. I mean, it's almost critical to some of these offenses to have a guy who can not only block, but who can get downfield like a wide receiver and get separation, especially from linebackers and safeties, and be a pass-catching threat. And so you have to have those things. And Mike Martz, on the other hand, he didn't believe in pass-catching tight ends. He traded the best one we had, a guy you might be aware of named Greg Olsen,
mm-hmm.
who went to Carolina and has become a perennial all-pro over there. He basically forced the trade of Greg Olsen, a former first-round pick, for a fourth-rounder when they eventually got rid of him because he just didn't have a place in his offense for pass-catching tight ends.
It's ridiculous.
Yes, exactly. So, and also, whenever the quarterback, and in this case it was Cutler, you know, was expected to go back on a seven-step drop to allow these routes to break downfield, he got crushed.
Yep.
I mean, that's all you can say. It just didn't work. It was the kind of offense, like I said, that if you don't have the line for it, then you just can't run it, and you shouldn't. So spread offenses are back, and they're new, and they're not new exactly. But for a long time, I think it was because Jim Kelly and the Bills ran that K-gun, you know, and it worked really well in Buffalo up to a point. But it just never seemed to get them over the hump. Now, I would argue they did get to four frickin' Super Bowls, okay?
Yes.
And you know, that's success. Even if they didn't win one, that is still
absolutely
darn good success. And frankly, if the Cowboys had just not been as dominating as they were during that period, I think, you know, they would have won at least one.
They should have beat the Giants. I mean,
you know. Yeah, you know, that's exactly right. If Norwood had not pushed that kick,
wide right. Yeah.
You know, if he had not pushed that kick wide right, they would have won the game, and that would have legitimized everything. But the fact is, for a long time, I think a lot of teams were hesitant because they were afraid of Buddy Ryan called that offensive system the chuck and duck, okay?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was never one to be shy about his opinions about certain things in the NFL, and one of them was his distaste for a run-and-shoot type offense. But the fact is, now it's a faster-paced game, it is a higher-octane game, and you have to be able to have a guy who can drop back two, three steps and the ball's out, you know? And that's one of Trubisky's strengths. He's coming out of a system from North Carolina where that was the kind of, you know, basically in the college ranks, it's a one read, kind of like one read and throw kind of deal. You set the offense, you look at the defense, you figure out who's going to be open, and the ball's leaving your hand practically the moment that you receive it from the shotgun. Now, you have to take you have to take a lot of snaps from under center in the NFL. Yeah. So, you know, you're not going to be doing as much from the shotgun except in obvious passing situations. But the fact that that Nagy intends to and employed successfully a lot of spread offense concepts in KC, they're bringing that to Chicago. And that's, you know, one of the things that will be very helpful because the quarterback, it suits him, you know. They just now mainly need to focus on getting wideouts so that they can get the ball. So he's got somebody really good to get the ball to. They've got a couple of guys already, two or three even guys, who are going to be coming back from injury, you know, could be in that mix. But this offseason particularly, they need to be active in free agency looking for a wide receiver who can really potentially – stretch the field and be a number one. They really need a guy who's a clear-cut number one wide receiver. They also need to be looking for that guy in the draft, definitely. But I'm excited. I think they've got some good guys. They've hired some assistant head coach. They've hired some coordinators who I really like a lot. And the only question, the big looming question right now is a defensive coordinator, because they want the guy who was coordinating their defense, understandably, back, Vic Fangio. And he's not said no. And, you know, they've made it clear that they would like to maintain that continuity on defense. And it's just a matter of him finally – I mean, people, as good as he is, people have not been beating down his door. So hopefully he's going to just say, all right, you know, I'm back. And we'll have that continuity, and I think that's going to benefit the team immensely.
Well, exciting times ahead for you there, and I wish you the best with it, man.
I sure hope so. Sure. Thank you.
Yeah. Absolutely. Like I say, we'll see what happens. I like the hire, and you know, definitely offensive-minded hire for sure.
You got young,
but not ridiculously young, but young, and that's a good thing. So. An Andy Reid disciple, you can't go wrong with that. Probably, you never know. You can, but I mean,
there have been a number of you talk about coaching trees. There have been more successful Andy Reid disciples than there have been Bill Belichick disciples. So
there's
that.
Yeah, yep. So good stuff. We will see what happens, brother. Good luck on it.
Thank you.
You know, you'll have some interesting times ahead of you this way. Hopefully in a good way.
You don't mean that in the tiny, terrible way.
No. Fun, interesting. It was hopefully fun, interesting.
Right.
Now, last week in the playoffs, the other games, of course, but let's see. I'm trying to think. Pretty much the only thing that really kind of surprised me was the Titans. Speaking of Andy Reid, I mean, I that one kind of got to me. I'm like, wow, I just thought the – And then I realized this. I heard a statistic that just blew me away, and that is that the Chiefs have not won a playoff game at home since something like 1972.
Wow!
At home, mind you.
Yeah.
And I'm going, that can't be right.
Right.
But I heard again. Of course, I didn't fact check it, so maybe it was wrong. But I heard it on the NFL Network or somewhere. I'm like, are you sure? I mean, I could see a road, maybe not on the road, but. Again, They were not a good team in the 70s. They were not a good team in the 80s. They were a they didn't really get good again until Schottenheimer was there, and they had Montana for a short time. And before that, they had, Christian Okoye. And that's a team that's a city that's been through a severe drought. And, to get your first home playoff game in a long time, to drop it to a team you should handle, that you should beat. It's just,
that big playoff win that they won against it was the Oilers, right?
Yeah, in
Houston. With Joe Montana, and it must have been in Houston I just remember that it was a big win because everybody had favored the Oilers to win that one. That was when Buddy Ryan, I think, was their defensive coordinator.
That is correct.
He almost got into that fight with Kevin Gilbride on the sidelines. He took a swing at him.
Exactly when he punched him. So I'm like, wow, that is just a long, long, long drought. I mean, not even a playoff game since the early 70s, and just amazing. So that one floored me. Aside from that, nothing really surprises me that much. We had the Rams had a nice season, and it was but the Falcons, no matter how much I hate them, they're seasoned at this right now, and gotta hand it to them. I think they're fighting to, after what happened to them last year, most teams wouldn't even come back this far.
Right.
So give them some credit. How about them Jags?
Yep.
But the game I want to talk about, of course, I just as nice and solid a win as I could have expected, but by the Saints, considering that, this is a Carolina team, inconsistent, banged up with a quarterback banged up, but has a pretty good defense and a good solid coach, and we knew we were going to get everything that they could hand to us, so we were going to get everything from them. And I cannot, obviously it wasn't easy. It was tight at times, but I cannot ask for more solid performance from the team, considering our injuries, especially, which are legion, on defense, especially, and of course, in our offensive line. This game here, I'm sure you watched it. It looked to me like the Panthers, and you can't really blame them either. They kind of came in and said, look, you're not going to destroy us with your two-headed monster.
Right.
We're going to try to take that away, and because we have some run-blocking issues right now anyway with our line injuries. So they did a fairly decent job of keeping – they kept the Saints to like 50-something yards rushing. But the problem is when you do that, you're saying you guys are going to beat us, and you're going to have to beat us with your quarterback. And when you say that to the Saints, they're going to go, okay, hey, number nine, get to work.
Right.
And that's, I guess that, again, if I don't know. I don't know what I would do. If I'm the Panthers, I guess I'd probably say, do I want to go after that running game, or do I want to drop everybody back and try to keep Drew Brees from picking us to pieces?
It's a rock and a hard place.
Yeah, it's a tough one, man. I don't know which way I would go either. I guess you figure we'll go with trying to stop even no matter how good the quarterback is, he's a gunslinger, he's a risk taker. And he has made look, as much as I love him, he's taken risks that drove me fucking insane, dude.
Right.
Drew will definitely tear your heart out sometimes with a throw. It's like, look, the mentality is I'm not. He's fearless. He's a gunslinger.
Yes.
And if you live by the gunslinger, you die by the gunslinger. Some have say.
Yeah.
The people in Green Bay can tell you that. So. He takes your chances. He buys your tickets. And I guess that was what the Panthers were hanging their hat on. And hey, look, just didn't work out. I think they just proved that. Look, you want to bring the old man. You want to prove that the old man could still go out there and rip people up. Well, here you go.
Right.
And it was just a joy to watch. The defense was solid. Let's see. Allowed 5 field goal attempts, one which was missed inexplicably, but I'll take it. And then they only gave up 2 big drives for 2 big touchdowns, which usually they're good for one stinker of a drive per game.
Right.
Where they'll give up, we'll be like, what the fuck, boys? And they're also good for some really fucked up penalties. They kept – I was proud of them keeping the penalties down. That was one thing that they were – that's something they've really needed to work on, that they've gotten kind of – they did an okay, decent job of keeping the penalties down for a change. So, overall, this was a relatively clean game that I don't have a lot of complaints about because, again, this is the playoffs. This is the playoffs, and it's always going to be brutal. It's always going to be tough, and you're going to get everybody's A shot. You know, Panthers don't like us. We don't like them. So all I can say is good job, boys. You're on track, even though you got a lot of bad injuries. And maybe nobody thinks you can win in Minnesota. I think you can, though. I think they can. And if they're going to.
They absolutely can, yes.
Right, and if they're going to. But, well, before I go into that, what were your thoughts or observations about this game real quickly?
Oh, about the Saints-Panthers?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I agree pretty much with everything you said. I mean, they did do a remarkable job of stopping the run, and that was – I think that's key if your back end can hold up basically in one-on-one coverage. And, you know, it almost worked. I mean, when you get right down to it, the game came down to that missed field goal that
right.
That Guano missed at the start.
Yeah.
If he doesn't shank that field goal, then the Panthers kick a field goal and you go into overtime and who knows what happens there. So
yep.
In that respect, they had to score a touchdown, and that was what really wound up making the difference. So I think that was probably the right move. I think that the Vikings are going to do the same thing. They're just going to trust that their defensive backs, since they've got arguably the best defense in the league,
yeah.
They're just going to try to trust their defensive backs to, you know, try to take away, you know, targets for number nine. But, you know, again, the problem is, of course, you're dealing with one of the guys who I've described him this way before. I'll say it again. He's an assassin. I mean,
yeah.
He gets back there and he can throw the ball into windows. Just on the basis of not just arm strength and anticipation, just a kind of a freaky anticipation that very, very few quarterbacks in the league have ever had. So, you know, it's going to be a tall order. It really is. And so when it comes to what the Panthers did, I think that they almost had the defense to pull it off. They their offense, it took a while to get clicking, but they finally got something going.
Yep.
And on the one hand, it wasn't looking to me like the game was going to be as close as it wound up being. But
right.
On the other hand, you know, just looking at the strategy that they employed, I think they did the right thing. And whether they did it or not, I think it was probably what the Vikings were going to do coming up anyway.
Yeah.
And the question is just going to be obviously it's going to, you know, the difference in the game is going to come down to how number nine responds, because I think the Saints defense is up to the task. I know we'll talk more about the actual game, the actual playoff.
Yeah.
But the upshot is that you know, and of course if that game takes place in Carolina, you never know, because home field advantage, especially in the playoffs, does make makes a pretty good difference, especially later. But that game with the Panthers was, you know, it wasn't just like a playoff game between two teams who normally don't play one another. The
yeah.
Panthers and the Saints, you know, play two intense games every year. So it was going to be an especially intense game. So it was a big win for the Saints, and you just hope that, you know, some teams seem to, when they have a big emotional game early in the playoffs, sometimes it can drain them, and you just hope that the Saints, you know, don't allow that to happen, so that when they go into Minnesota, they're just as intense, because, you know, they're going to need it, because, again, this is, to my eye anyway, the three best teams remaining in the playoffs right now are the Falcons, the Vikings, and the Saints. I guess that probably tells you who I'm going to pick between the Falcons and the Eagles. You know,
I understand.
And I would probably pick the Eagles over the Falcons if Wentz were still playing, because Wentz was just dialed in. He was just
right.
playing amazing football. But
yes.
Nick Foles, on the other hand, no. No. He as backup quarterbacks go, you know, he has not held up.
No.
So, yeah, the gist of it all is going to be how psyched and motivated the Saints are, because unless, and this is a big deal now, you have brought up kind of like the NFL Illuminati scenario here, where the NFL is determined to keep a team from playing a Super Bowl in what amounts to its home stadium. So they might assign a Jeff Triplett type announcing team, or rather a officiating team,
right,
to the game in order to make sure that that does not happen, which would be to the Saints' advantage, just as it was to the Titans' advantage, because honestly, Triplett screwed the Chiefs. I mean, yeah, the Titans, you know, they had showed a lot of grit and all that good stuff, but Triplett just screwed that game up. That was a sack.
Fourth double,
clear recovery by the Chiefs would have been returned for a touchdown. But no, there's Jeff Triplett's crew blowing the whistle, saying that forward progress had been stopped. Now, how moronic is that, Mike? Okay, it's a sack. He's not a ball carrier. He's
right
in the pocket trying to throw the ball. He gets hit. He loses the ball. A Chiefs player picks it up, and the whistle's blown.
You know something? I missed that because I was not home at the time.
Yes, it was as blatant. I was like, "Oh wow, look at that! That's a sack, forced fumble, and here's the Chiefs player picking it up, and he's in the position to run, and the refs are running in, waving their arms over their heads, and I'm like, what are you doing? What are you talking about? I mean, it was play after. I mean, there were other calls in the game like that. Andy Reid after the game, you know, as sometimes they have to do. He was asked about the officiating, and he basically said as much as, you know, I thought it sucked. I'd say more, but I don't want to get fined. You know, I mean, it was that blatant. Oh, and Mr. Triplett has coincidentally, or perhaps not so coincidentally, announced his retirement. So I have a feeling that the backlash from that particular game has made it plain to the NFL that Mr. Triplett is no longer up to the task of officiating in the National Football
League. Wow.
Yes, and so it really was that blatant, and you know, in a game that the Chiefs lost by one stinking point, you know, every little thing matters, and when the Zebras frickin' cost you a game. And not, they don't just cost you a game because they miss something that is clearer on certain replays than on others. You know, no gray area stuff. When they lose you the game on basic stuff like sack fumble type deal.
Yeah.
You know, that's unacceptable.
Wow.
That's intolerable. You know, people just get infuriated over that. You know, you feel like, well, what is the effing point if – you know, we're going to get bounced out of the playoffs because the officials don't know how to do their stinking jobs. So anyway, you know,
I didn't even hear about that because I was gone. I was not going to get home in time to watch that game.
Right.
Because I had the comms at the con.
Yeah. 5 days ago, Jeff Triplett reported that he will retire. And this one site has a headline: Jeff Triplett painted his personal masterpiece before reportedly retiring. Yes.
Wow.
So, it was just one of those cases where people have, I think, have been after Triplett for quite a while now, and it's finally dawned on everybody. You know,
right,
he's got to go.
Yeah.
So anyway. You know.
Well, I did not know about that. Well, again, on you know, the only other thing I'll say about the Panthers game is that I was very proud of a pretty clean win. It got a little tight there toward the end, but for the most part, they definitely made use of the home field advantage and definitely just looked like a team that was definitely ready to play football that day. Instead of having some of the games recently, they have not looked all that ready. They were they looked like a very focused and determined football team the other day.
Right.
And they got a lot of injuries, and they're just doing the old type of Belichick type thing of plugging people in there that you never heard of and playing and getting them to play well. So good job, boys, on that one. I think they've shown that, yeah, this is going to be an uphill one. Now we're moving on now to the Vikings game.
Yes.
There, but like so, like 4.5 point underdogs right now at this point.
I guess we're moving into our picks now.
Yeah, we'll do.
It's time to do it anyway.
Yeah, well, that's all right. Let's do that then. Last week, what was it? I was 3-1.
I was 2-2, I believe.
Okay, there we go.
I took all the home teams.
Okay. This week, of course, we've got the first game Saturday. Oh, sorry. Oh, I'm okay. Yeah, first game Saturday is the Atlanta Falcons at the Philadelphia Eagles.
Yes, and this week it's going to be easier on you because you don't have to go through the various permutations of Los Angeles's genesis through the league. Yes. Well, looking at this game, I think the Falcons have been taking my disrespect to heart because, it seems like every time I have given up on them, they have bounced back and they have discovered a way to win that involves less offense than they had last season, but more defense and very good defense in point of fact. They have really been playing solid ball on that side, and they've been scoring enough points to win. They've been actually kind of finding themselves a bit more on offense than – I mean, last year they were just a machine on offense, and this year it hasn't been clicking, but they've found a way to get just enough out of the offense and couple that with a very determined defense to really play solid ball. And like I said earlier, if I were – picking this game with Carson Wentz at quarterback, I would be going with the home team. But Philadelphia just has not been the same since Wentz went down, and we all see it. You know, they just have not been they have not looked dominating at all. They've been squeaking out wins and losing games, and they are lucky that they had a bye because I think they would have been out in the first round if they had played like they've been playing.
Yeah.
So looking at it from that vantage, especially given that the Falcons have the most recent playoff experience, as you pointed out, and they're back and they have found, like I said, they have found their identity. I'm going to go with the Falcons in Philadelphia. I think that they are in the equation for the NFC Championship. So, picking the Falcons.
There you go. Well, I've not only picked them as well because I think really, like you said, I think they're playing better defense, and they to me are smack of a scary team because of a lot of teams after that humiliation last year in the Super Bowl would have probably folded up tent by now. They have not gone away yet. That makes them scary. And again, I'm totally with you about Wentz. Wentz is there. I'm picking the Eagles easy, but he's not. Foles, I actually I've thought highly of him in the past, but he's certainly not playing particularly well right now, and I will go with the dirty birds. Filthy birds. The Saturday night game, the Tennessee Titans at the New England Patriots. The Boston New England Patriots.
Yes. Well, I'll tell you this. I'm going with the pick that everyone else on God's green earth is making, and that's the Pats.
Yeah.
But I'll say this. If the Titans show the kind of grit against the Pats they showed against the Chiefs, I mean, they were down at halftime, like 21-3.
Yeah.
And if they show the kind of grit that they showed against the Chiefs, then, you know, let me just say that I expect the Patriots to win and probably win big. But there is something about this. Nobody should just count the Titans out. I mean, they really knuckled down under pressure and came back. And with the assistance of Jeff Triplett's incompetent crew, won that game.
Yeah.
So, if they can show the same resolve, then we might all be surprised. So this isn't one of those cases where I just give them no chance. I give them a small chance. But in the end, you know, it's hard to bet against the machine that is the Patriots, you know. That said, it would make my freaking weekend, it would make my freaking rest of the season if the Pats could get bounced out, because then almost
yes.
almost any combination of remaining teams would be fine for me in the Super Bowl. I just want the Pats gone.
Right.
I
do too.
God, I hope. So,
yeah.
But you're
with you. I agree absolutely everything you said. I also believe that I would not fall dead of complete and utter shock if the Titans found a way to work it out of there.
Sure.
To knock them out, like you said. But I'm going to go with, because of because there's a more important upset special I want, I'm going to say that I came close to picking the Titans. It's tough not to go. They're scrappy, but
right.
I could see them really sweating the Patriots toward the end, though, and making a game of it. But I'm going to go with the Patsies. It's just, you know, usually when the Patsies tank it, they don't usually tank in the first round. So
right.
Or in their first round. It's the second round. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The Jacksonville Jaguars on Sunday afternoon at the Pittsburgh Steelers.
This is really one of those games that's maybe a little harder to call than it might seem. The obvious choice is going to be Pittsburgh, and that's who I'm going to take. But as much as I think the Titans can give the Patriots trouble, I don't put the Steelers quite as, I don't look at the Steelers as being quite as good as the Patriots, and I consider the Jaguars better than the Titans.
Right.
Just in terms of overall talent. And while I think Mariota is a much better quarterback than Blake Bortles, Bortles is doing just enough to make it interesting. So my pick is the Steelers, but if any game, you know, has that potential to be kind of a shocker, it would be this one, because the Jaguars are perfectly capable with that defense of going in there and surprising everybody and beating the Steelers. So like I said, I'm taking the Steelers. That's my head talking, but my gut tells me this could be a lot more interesting than a lot of people think it might be.
I'm going to go with upset special extraordinaire and pick the Jags to go there. Not because they did it earlier, although you got to factor that in a little bit. Mm-hmm. Earlier in the year, they did that and just stomped all over the Steelers in a big shocker. That and the fact that I think the Steelers don't look all that solid to me right now. They are a very good team, don't get me wrong, but I see weeks where they kind of tank it a little bit. But with their playoff experience, they could, you know, just snap back and look like the old Steelers. But I like that Jags defense. I really do.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not saying Blake Bortles is the kind of guy that you're going to, you know, that you equate with big playoff wins or anything.
Oh, no.
But their defense can at least keep that the score low.
Yes.
They keep it a competitive game. And I got a weird feeling. They're going to find some way to pull this one out. Not a big one, because obviously it's an upset, but you just don't know. I think this is
right.
Just a good shot. I'm going to go with them just to pick an upset. Now, my New Orleans Saints at the Minnesota Vikings.
Yeah, this is one of those games that of all of them feels hardest to pick in the sense that you know, the Vikings did not limp into the playoffs. They came in. I mean, they took care of business in the regular season, and they did it in convincing fashion for the most part. Nobody gave them really much of a chance after Bradford had to go out, and of course Bridgewater was not ready, and they were playing Case Keenum, and they still clicked. I mean, their offense still dynamic. Their defense is probably the best in the league, if not. I mean, if it's not the best, it's top three. You know, their defense is just that good, and they're good front to back. And so, you know, when you've got a defense like that, when we talk about playoff football, one of the things that you really have to have coming in typically is that if not a dominating defense, at least a solid defense. That's how Belichick, you know, makes his living. He's able to come up with a defense even when it isn't full of great players. He's still able to come up with defensive schemes that confuse and create, you know, favorable matchups and just otherwise put the other offense on its heels. That's what he's a genius at doing. But, you know, lacking that, you just have to have talent across the board, and the Vikings do. So the Vikings, on the one hand, are a hell of a team. And but I look at the Saints right now, the Saints have been on, you know, this season for them has just been one that even you would admit, no Saints fan expected it.
None.
None of the people watching the Saints expected it.
None.
But the defense,
you're right.
But the defense evolved into a legit unit. The offense found balance between the two-headed monster of Ingram and Kamara and Drew Brees throwing the ball. And so offensively, I give the advantage any day to the Saints. Defensively, I would give the advantage to the Vikings, but not so much that it makes the biggest difference in the game. So I'm going to go with the Saints in this one. And I think it's mainly because the difference in offenses is probably enough to make up for any difference in the defense. I think the Saints are going to be able to run the ball at least enough. They may not have a dominating day on the ground, but they will be able to run the ball enough that the Vikings will have to attend to that, and that's going to open things up for Brees. And I think that it will be a close game, but I think the Saints pull it out.
Well, I know you won't be surprised to hear me pick the Saints because I'm such a homer, but especially in something like this.
Sure.
However, again, if the Saints were to, if we were like backed into the playoffs and we were not very good, and we lucked out some playoff win last week or something, you know, I might try to realistically assess it. But it's not easy when your heart is so involved in it. But
sure.
I honestly agree with everything you said, and that's why I'm picking them when we both know the game could go either way.
Sure.
This is the more of all these four games. I think this is the more evenly matched contest.
Yes.
I think this is going to be a relatively similar game to the Saints Panthers game in the sense that it'll just going to be hard fought.
Right.
And it's going to come to who can limit their opponent to field goals instead of touchdowns. Their defense is the best. There's no question about it. Ours is injured but playing very well.
Yep.
Our defense, in other words, even though their defense is the best, they still have to worry about, they still have to make the same decision that everyone does when they line up against the Saints. Are we going to go after the run? Because the Panthers were flooding the box all day long.
They still have
11 guys. So are we going to shut the run down? Or are we going to back up and let them run a little bit? Let's ease off, give them some running room. So Drew Brees doesn't kill us. And since that's probably the case, and since our defense can stop, I believe our defense can stop their offense just as much as theirs can stop ours, it turns into a – they have a pretty good running game, I guess, but no, we have a better running game. So if we're not going running game versus running game, comes a passing game versus passing game. What you do when you have both two really good defenses and it's indoors, you're basically creating – the possibility of a shootout.
Right.
And if it's a shootout, I just have to go with the Hall of Fame quarterback over the no-name quarterback. No offense to a guy who's done a really good job this year.
Mm-hmm.
But if this comes – this, it seems to me that the way these defenses are so good, that this comes down to which quarterback can make more plays. And Case Keenum may well make more plays. But – out of the two, and if I lived in Bumbuck, Egypt, and didn't care about the Saints, if I'm looking at this objectively even, which is hard to be when you love a team, I would go, okay, these teams are fairly evenly matched. One is the road team. Even though they're on the road, they've got the better quarterback, and in the playoffs, quarterbacks matter even more than the regular season most of the time. So if we're going to give the team an edge somewhere, one has the better defense, one has the better quarterback, a quarterback-driven league, playoffs all at stake, even though we're on the road, I'm going to give just enough of an edge to the team with the better quarterback here. So Drew Brees is my biggest reason, but not my only reason picking the Saints. And there's another thing. The Saints don't have to get a lot of running yards to get a lot out of their running game. And I'll give you an example from the Panthers game. I don't know if you remember this or not, but early on in the game, one of their touchdown drives suffered a couple of losses because of, I believe, Drew got sacked, and I think we lost a couple yards from penalties or whatnot. And just one little dump off to Kamara got the ball all the way back down into the 10-yard line again.
Right.
In other words, he didn't have a huge game. You get that ball in the space to him two or three times, and you're looking at some serious damage this guy can do. Mark Ingram, another guy. By the way, we have a guy named Brandon Coleman that I wish somebody would step on his face and get him out of the game. He's he is poison. That fucker cannot hold on to the football. Holy shit. If he is a fumble machine, and he's big, tall, lanky dude. He'll make some big catches for you. And if you see that fumble last week, if Mark Ingram doesn't get on that football, the game we're probably not having this conversation right now.
Right.
So Mark Ingram and is going to be good enough. He doesn't have to have 100 yards. Get him in there for 30 or 40 yards, and more importantly, down on the goal line, he's just so dangerous down there.
Right.
And so the running backs, this running game does not have to, or these running backs don't have to have 100 yards apiece. Like they had one game where they had stupid yards, like almost 290 yards of running this, on the ground. They don't have to have 200 yards on the ground. 50 or 60 probably wins them the football game because they're going to be using these guys in other aspects. We don't have a tight end. Josh Hill's playing okay. But just get them gaining enough to where the Vikings have to – because, you know, the Vikings are not going to just ignore those running backs.
Oh, no. They can't afford to.
No, they can't. So who do you worry about if you're a defensive coordinator? They are a great defense. Who do you worry about? Drew Brees or the running backs? Well, the answer is you don't know what – everybody. And then Michael Thomas, who has caught more passes in a two-year span than any receiver in the history of the NFL. I just saw that pop up on NFL Network. 196. Boy, I mean, he's a fucking beast.
A machine.
I love that guy, dude. I'm telling you, he might be – he's better than Colston, and Colston was really great.
Right.
I mean, Colston was a wonderful – receiving for a lot of years. He was Drew's go-to guy, I'm sure you know, for a lot of years. Well, I mean, remember, there was a time there when we had Colston, Henderson, and Meacham. A lot of speed and all kind of possession power. You know, receivers was incredible. Colston was a stud, and Thomas is better. And that kid, he's not the fastest dude, but he'll get out there, and he, unlike Brandon fucking Coleman, who can't catch a cold, he catches everything, man. He's astonishing. And get the ball in his hands 10 times. Man, that's huge. So both defenses, especially in my opinion, the Vikings have the work cut out for them.
Right.
So I do believe I pick us, but that doesn't mean anything because they got to go out there and get the job done. They're very, very capable of winning it. I truly believe that, but of course they might not. If they don't you know, it's going to be a tough one. And well, I just excuse. We'll be here next week talking one way or the other, but I hope we're talking about the Falcons winning and us winning, so we can host the Atlanta Falcons in the NFC Championship game. I don't want to get too ahead of myself, but boy, how sweet would that be?
Well, woo. Yeah. Just curiously, when are the Saints playing in the Super Bowl? What date does that fall on this year?
Isn't it the second?
Yeah, I think
of
you're right.
February?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, going to be making the march up to Minnesota. That's back to Minnesota.
Yep, back to Minnesota.
What's that?
Back to Minnesota. My brother and his they're all going this week.
It'll be like a home game for them. They'll be so familiar with that field.
Yeah, third time. Going to Minnesota for a third fucking time. I really hope so. Like I say, dude, in all seriousness, I'm trying not to get my hopes too high because you know how it feels when you just get you get there, you get bumped out, and you know how it felt when you guys got to the Super Bowl and even though we won the only one we've been in, remember we're the ones you guys knocked out to get there, so it always sucks.
Yeah,
but you know what though.
2007 wasn't so far away that I forget, but at the same time, I'm going to tell you this. I didn't allow myself to get too up for it. I really didn't.
I don't blame you.
The Colts are an excellent team.
Right.
No one is giving us a chance, and I hate to say it, but with Rex Grossman at quarterback, I do not see us. I mean, and one other big key injury that year, we had not just an all-pro defensive lineman, but a potential Hall of Fame lineman in Tommy Harris. He was dominating.
Yeah.
He could.
Yes.
He was flash quick, and he was powerful, and he just caused trouble in the interior of a line at that defensive tackle that most teams never saw. And he did one of those numbers where he tore his hamstring off the bone, and he messed up his knee, and he just never had the leg strength after that season. And losing him, if we had had him for that game, I might have even picked us, because he would have been knifing in there on Peyton Manning, a classically immobile quarterback, and it would have been really freaking tough. But losing him, it made our defense just very good as opposed to excellent. And then couple that with an offense that had a guy who was prone to throwing interceptions. And, you know, it was only a 10-point game, 27-17, but we were never really in it. I mean, in the sense that we never really felt like we had momentum or were in control of the game. And so I'm just saying that, you know, it wasn't the same for me as it would be if I felt like this team that I'm rooting for is going into the Super Bowl with an equal chance to win it. Or even a superior chance to win it, you know, and feeling that kind of let down. I was let down. I was hoping we'd find a way, but I knew that the Colts were the better team, and that was borne out. So, you know, in this case, if it's Saints against Patriots, you know, or, you know, a game like that, you know, that's going to be one of those things where it's going to be kind of like, you know, I'm trying to figure out, you know, John McClane versus Hans Gruber. You know, it really will have that kind of
right.
air, and that you want the evil empire to get vanquished. And not unlike the way the Saints beat the Colts. I mean, the Colts went in there. Everybody thought the Colts were going to win it.
Yeah, we didn't get much of a chance either, man.
Yeah, and for the Saints to go in on that basis and win that game the way they did, especially with that exciting pick six that Tracy Porter ran back. I mean, that and for the Saints to just step up and to beat the team that you know everybody is assuming is going to win the game. You know, that would be similar to this year's, you know, Super Bowl if it were to come to that, and I'd welcome it. I mean, sometimes teams need that kind of bulletin board fodder, you know. Nobody's respecting us. Nobody's giving us a chance.
Right.
And it really can play in. And so, just based on how the Saints have been playing, you know, I see that as a distinct possibility. Now, if they happen to go in there and they're against the Titans or something like that, anybody who wouldn't favor the Saints under those circumstances would be
right.
crazy. You know.
Well, you know, look, we that year when we got in, because I feel you. I remember with that year when the Bears were in it, and nobody was giving them a shot, and people forgot something. I remember I was getting in conversations about that game, and I was said, I'm not so sure the Bears are going to lose, even with Grossman. And I said, people are forgetting that in the regular season, the Colts were the worst team against the run in football. The grandmother could run against these motherfuckers. And they were terrible. And then they got Bob Sanders back in the post. No one thought the Colts were going to the fucking Super Bowl because they couldn't stop the run. And then they had that game where they came back against the Patriots and they got in there. So they were not a juggernaut by any stretch of the imagination. And I thought the Bears defense could slow them down enough and they could, you know, pound it on them. But I always thought it was a long shot because of Grossman. And I remember Lovie Smith, probably a hell of a good guy. But he actually said the words, it doesn't matter who we got at quarterback.
Yes.
I'm like, what league are you? What is this, 1930?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, are we running the
football? What do you mean
it
doesn't
matter? Are we running the football option here? Or are we running the, you know, the
like, this is Leatherheads?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, what in the fuck are you talking about, man? Doesn't matter. Now, again, I guess you got to give him credit. He got to a Super Bowl with Rex Grossman. I mean, there are a couple guys. One guy got to a Super Bowl with Brad Johnson, another guy got to a Super Bowl with Trent Dilfer. But for the most part, you don't get to the Super Bowl, even get to it with guys like that. So,
right.
You know, you got to have be pretty phenomenal in other areas.
Yes.
And, you know.
And the Bears, like I said, the thing is the Bears would have been phenomenal on defense if a healthy Tommy Harris is in that game.
Right.
And it would have made all the difference because then – I don't think Rex Grossman feels like he has to go back and win the game all by himself, which he's not capable of doing, hence the three interceptions I recall him throwing. You know, it just gets to where when you start putting the ball in a guy's hands like that, it's not just a crapshoot. It's a crapshoot where you are walking up to the table in the casino knowing you've lost your money before you've even bought it. You know, that's the problem.
Right.
So that was the whole deal in a nutshell with Grossman and the Bears. And, you know, you want to go into a game like that not wanting someone like Grossman to have to win it for you. And he did. They had to come from behind, and they never had a chance of doing that. So, oh, well, you know, what could have been?
Well, like I said, they were not giving the Saints a chance. I had to stop listening to national sports talk radio. I remember as far as guys in the mainstream, only Cowher and Gruden were picking the Saints to win it. And I'm like, look, I understand. Look, that was a year where the Colts were a way better team that year than they were when they won it. They were like 13-3 or something like that, or 14-2, something like that. Where they came close to trying to make decisions. Should they try to go undefeated? And they made the smart decision to worry about the Super Bowl. I remember, but everyone was on the Patriots. I mean, on the Colts saying, maybe you guys should try to go undefeated. Now we're gonna worry about the Super Bowl. I remember that. So everyone's like, no, yeah. And I actually heard one ass on some radio. Who's it? Douchebag that I never could stand. Anyways, one of these ESPN radio guys, he's saying that, I'm telling you right now, Peyton Manning cannot lose this game. Lose it. I'm like, well, yeah, I think he can lose. I mean, maybe he won't, but he can. And everybody was just like, oh, yeah, you know. Saints did a nice job getting there and everything. Now, true, we begged the Vikings to beat up on us. And we begged the Vikings in the NFC Championship game to go in our stead, but Brett Favre said, no, you guys go on without us.
He insisted on throwing that late game interception.
He insisted it,
to steal the deal.
He said, no, you know, you're my boys, and I got mine. I'm a Louisiana man, you know. I'm a Mississippi, Louisiana kind of guy, so you guys take it. Yeah. Thank you, Brett, because we played an awfully shitty game. But nevertheless, we got there we got our championship going through three straight Hall of Fame quarterbacks.
Isn't it interesting how so many seemingly memorable, anyway, playoff games seem to involve the Saints and the Vikings?
This will be our fourth time to play them in the playoff game.
Yeah. Just, interesting that it seems like of all the sort of playoff rivalries, that don't involve divisional opponents, this is one that seems to stick out. I mean, hell, I remember back in the late 80s when I didn't give the Vikings any chance against the Dome Patrol. Nobody did.
Kramer. Wade Wilson, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, Wade. And to this day, you're like, how did the Vikings go in there and win?
It was – well, again, then the next year, whatever, the next time when they played the Falcons, we were injured on – our corners were injured and everything. But, they torched us on the – Michael Haynes and Andre Rice. And, And a couple years later, the Eagles came in and did the same thing. We had our defense was as good as anybody's. If the Eagles, Saints, two best defenses in the game, they come in there. We got them down. I went to that one, 20-7 at the half, and then was mad at me like, I think we're gonna blow this one. Fuck you, we got this, man. All right. Well, anyway, dude, I really appreciate you hanging with me, my brother. As always, it's fun, and I'm gonna be I'm sure you will probably be watching football this weekend as I will be, and. Just spare me a thought there Sunday night or Sunday afternoon, the pain and the anxiety that I'll be going through that glorious 3 hours. There's really nothing like it, though.
No.
It's just when you know your season could be over, it's just more intense.
The only consideration I've got for the Sunday is that I have my nephew's birthday party in the early afternoon. It starts at about 2. And I don't know how long that's going to go. So when I may be coming back to the Saints game in progress, I'm going to try to watch as much of it as I can. But you know, it's just going to be one of those things where it's a bowling birthday party kind of deal. So
I understand.
I will, but I will definitely catch in, catch as much as I can, so that the next time we gather together to either celebrate or commiserate,
right,
we will at least be somewhat on the same page.
Well, I will tell you this, that, you know, at least if you, when you get, it sucks to lose it all, but when you get, it's nice to at least, there's nothing worse than getting knocked out in the first round, the wild card. So
right,
that's at least something. The semifinals is not, we don't like that either, but man, it would have been a lot more of a bummer to be sitting here tonight going, man, we didn't even, because at least, you know, you got by one. Playoff victory feels, playoff victory really does feel good.
Yeah.
Really does. Again, yeah. At the end, only one team's going to feel good, but when you get that playoff victory, you get a week of thinking, man, we won a fucking playoff game, baby, yeah!
Yeah. Woo, baby! Woo,
yeah,
baby!
Yeah.
I mean, I will, you know, just basically say that even if it doesn't go your way right now, I think you're building. I mean,
yeah,
you've got a quarterback who, you know, these other quarterbacks talk about wanting to play into whatever, you know, their 80s or 90s. Your quarterback is still obviously able to play for, it looks like, you know, the foreseeable future, you know.
Yeah.
You don't see a guy who has fallen off, who has lost a step in terms of his pocket presence and mobility. His arm is still alive. You know, he's still making great decisions. So, you know, this is a case where, you know, I have to put the Saints down as contenders for next year, too. And so I know it would be a cold comfort if they don't get past the Vikings. But
right,
at the very least, you know, you've got something to build on. You have a team that can win now and is getting better. So
yeah,
take that to heart.
Sure. And like I say, you're on the road, so it's always a tough shot, a longer shot. So
yeah, exactly.
We'll see, man. But I do appreciate it as always, my brother. Thank you so much. And
I'm happy to be here, happy to talk pigskin.
All right, buddy. Well, thank you. And I want to thank everyone out there listening on the feeds and the downloads and all that stuff. And I may as well, for good luck, this will be my superstition for the next, you know, it's for as long as we're around. So I'll play I'll play out with what I play this in with. So Saints go all the way. All right, everybody, have a great week. Who dat?
Who dat? Take care.
Later, buddy.
Later.
This thing ain't working. Come on. There we go. Saints. Who dat?